I'm already at page 52. Okay. We are in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and Paul is recounting his behavior when he was with them. And here we see how a pastor should behave, how a spiritual leader behaves. A spiritual leader is not necessarily someone who has a position, but rather someone who has a godly influence and whose character is such that he gains respect from others. If you have to keep telling people you're the leader, then you're not the leader. And Paul is recounting here his behavior, perhaps because he is being criticized for having left so quickly. So he is recounting what he was like when he's there. We're down to verse 3. And he talks about his preaching here. He characterizes it as an appeal. Do you see that? It is an appeal. He speaks for God. He wants to be accurate. He wants to be clear. But he has to be tender-hearted. In fact, very few preachers survive. I can think of one or two examples that they did survive, but they had rather unique circumstances. But a lot of preachers don't survive who act like bullies. I remember doing a funeral in a very upscale funeral home. And after I got done doing the funeral, I said to the funeral director, I said, I noticed a hole, a huge hole in the platform, a podium that I spoke from. He said, yeah, we used to have a clock there. I said, oh, what happened? He said, a particular pastor, this is in the Detroit area, came into their office with that clock in his hand and said, I want you to know I am not guided by the clock. Well, okay, I understand when the spirit is at work, you don't want to shut it off. And there's something wrong with a person who says, I can only give you 1 hour when it comes to spiritual things. But to destroy another person's property, there are some pastors that are frankly bullies. I don't think Paul was that way. I think if we're going to see here, he's very tender-hearted. It is a tough combination to have. I find that it's easy to be tough-minded if you're not tender-hearted. And I've seen people that were tender-hearted or tough-hearted and tender-headed. You want to be both. You want to think clearly, but you want to be merciful and tender and gentle with people. Because people are hurting. Wiersbe said one time, he has a note in his Bible, in the flyleaf of his Bible, be careful how you handle people, because you don't know where they're hurting. And you have to be that way. And the temptation in the pastorate, I'll tell you one of the occupational hazards of the pastorate. You start denouncing the sins of others, and you get a rush of, you just get this rush. You're God's spokesman. I'm telling them just the way the cow ate the cabbage. And by the way, when you denounce other people's sins, you always feel so righteous yourself. And you have to be very careful that you don't get on that power rush. And you have to watch out for it. Now, I've committed that a couple times. I remember one time getting a telephone call from my father, who took me to task. I was in my 20s and had the gift of infallibility. You know how that is? And I was just letting the congregation have it. And my father called me and said, heard your sermon. Oh, good, Dad. Thank you. I don't think you should try that one again. So you always have to be very careful that you don't get into a power rush. You know, it gives you a sense of self-righteousness. You're able to denounce another person's sin that you don't see that you do. So you get a double rush. I'm denouncing sin and I'm accepting myself, you see. And it is easy to happen in the pastorate. And there's a sense in which I have to say, it is the Spirit's job to convict, not mine. I have to preach the word truly, but I have to do it with an awareness that whenever you denounce sin, you set yourself up for judgment. Judge not, lest what? You be judged. Now, you still have to make the statement. You still have to say this is a sin. You can't back off on that. You have to speak the truth. But if you don't speak the truth in love, in tenderness, what does Paul say that those in Galatians 6, that when you have to set somebody, I'll get the exact passage here for you in just a second. He says in Galatians 6, brethren, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. So, Paul is going to say his preaching is an appeal. You always have to remember that you are not only a dying man preaching to dying men, but you are a sinner preaching to other sinners. And so you have to be, you cannot be callous and say, I'm just being tough-minded. I'm just, this is the facts. There it is. Take it or leave it. That's not an appeal. That's not an appeal. Some pastors have used the truth of God as a club with which to hit people. But it's the Spirit's job to convict. And you see this, by the way, in 2 Corinthians, starting in about chapter 2, verse 11, all the way through chapter 6. He has a parenthesis there about the pastorate. He talks about our appeal, verse 3. It does not come from error. You preach the truth. Oh, yes, you preach the truth. Or impurity. You're asking people to become holy. An attempt to deceive. Don't want to do that. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. Okay, I'm not going to please men. That's good, 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 good. But you're going to have to please God. And if you don't do it right, you won't be pleasing God. So you have to be careful. You be very, very careful. Verse 5, he talks about one extreme you can go to in the ministry. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, for a pretext for greed. Heard the story, oh man, it must have been 50 years ago I heard this story, about a man who took a pastorate in Kentucky. He said as he drove to the church, he looked out and saw field after field of tobacco. And he said later, you know, I figured then that my first sermon should not be about the sin of smoking. Well, I'm not sure it's a sin to smoke, but you understand what he's doing. There's always a tendency to curb the truth. You don't want to flatter people. You don't have to, you know, you're all just a wonderful group of people. Just keep it up. Compliments need to be deserved. Compliments can be cheap. And once people figure out your compliments are cheap, they write you off. They write you off. A flatterer, said Sir Walter Raleigh, is a snake that bites while smiling. That's what a flatterer is. He says, a snake that bites while it smiles. It says one thing to your face, another thing behind your back. And that you never want to say anything behind someone's back. If you got a problem with somebody, you go to that problem, because once you start making a comment to person over here, you know how it is. Everything gets out eventually, and you end up making yourself look bad. So you don't want to be a flatterer, saying something to their face, you know, great job, and then you go over here and conspire to get the pastor kicked out of the pulpit. I've seen that. You don't want to be that way. And that's usually for a pretext of greed. They want something. You know, pastors compliment the crowd because they want to maintain their job. You have to fight that. You have to fight that. And here is one thing that you always, a pastor always has to remember. The last part of verse 5, God is witness. What was it Lincoln said? I love Lincoln. You can fool some of the people, some of the time, and all of the people, some of the time. But you can't fool all of the people, all of the time. P.T. Barnum said there, it was denied, saying there's a sucker born every minute. He should have said, and some are born again. You must remember that God is a witness. He knows what's in your heart. He knows when you're been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Yeah. I have to constantly remember, not tonight, just like last Sunday night, before I go to bed, I sit down in a brown chair in the front room, and I ask the Lord, okay, tell me what you think. And there are times when I walk away pleased, and there are other times I walk away totally ashamed. Because while I gave an outward impression of something, my heart has convicted me. And you must be tender. I find that if I believe that God is with me every moment and sees everything I do, I won't be tempted to think I can do something in private and get away with it. Understanding the omnipresence of God is a good retardant for sin. Then it goes on in verse 6. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether for you or from others. It's by the way, I quit a long time ago, standing at the doorway at the end of the service, and standing in such a way to greet the people. Now, I don't want to be unfriendly. I try to greet. What I learned was from watching Warren Wiersbe, who spent his time before the church service began greeting the people. And then after the service, you didn't have to do that. My uncle used to stand by the door. He was a pastor. And we got through the process of what one man has called the glorification of the worm. You like that phrase, eh? You understand what it is? Yeah. Yeah. That is where you deliberately set people up to commit the sin of lying to your face. Oh, Pastor, that was a wonderful sermon today. Now, I'm like, you've heard me quote Abraham Lincoln, who said he felt about compliments the same way he felt about cornbread. There was nothing he loved so much and got so little love. A compliment is always well received. It's certainly better than a kick in the pants. But you have to not go give this kind of message to people. And you don't seek glory from people, because if God is a witness, it doesn't matter what other people say, you're going to be in trouble. But here's how he does it. He says, although, in verse 6, how could he seek glory from people, whether from you or others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ? Paul ends up working with his hands so that he didn't have to charge anyone for hearing the gospel. I don't think anybody should have to pay. An unbeliever should have to pay to hear the gospel. I've been to some evangelistic meetings where you had unbelievers show up and then they pass the plate to pay for the evangelist. I don't think that's appropriate. The unbeliever should understand that the gospel is free and hearing it is free. Now, in 1 Timothy, Paul says that the worker is worthy of his hire. So it's okay for a pastor to receive a salary. But as David will know, I leave that all in the Lord's hands and into the deacon's hands. And I let the Lord deal with the deacons. That's his job. So he went among them and he had an outside job so that he didn't charge new converts anything. His integrity meant a lot. Pastor has to, that's it. There is a sense in which, have you noticed that the word professional is a compliment in our society? We want our doctors to be professional. We want our lawyers to act in a professional manner. When we go to a work, we expect professionalism. Professionalism is a compliment. Except in the ministry. I am not a professional. No profession that I know of has humility as a core value. I haven't seen it in any Fortune 500 company. Have you, David? Or mercy?
Ego.
Huh?
See an ego.
See ego. Yeah, that's all over the place, either visible or invisible. So I tell people, do you work for a living? No, I don't. I'm unemployed. I work my tail off, as you know. Ruth Ann was complaining the other day. What, don't you know enough by this time? Why do you have to keep studying? Because I want to feed you out of a fresh stream. I don't want to go get something from the freezer, microwave it, and hand it to you. I have never preached Jeremiah 17 before. And that comes from, I tried to give you something fresh. And if I preach through a book of the Bible that I've done before, start all over again like I'm ignorant. Because I want you to be fresh. You work hard in the pastorate. It's a great place for lazy people, I'll tell you that. David, how many times have you come in to check on me just to see if I'm doing my job? Zero. See? And I want to make sure that you say, if I walked into the church office right now, I would find him at work. I want David and the other deacons to say, we could check up on Lanny, but he has proven himself to be a self-starter. And I love what I do, and I'm so thankful that you've made it possible for me to study instead of stock shelves at HEB at night. I don't want to make demands on you. Look at verse 7. We were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her children. Now, I have met some pastors that did not have the gift of mercy. Now, I don't mind it if my doctor doesn't have the gift of mercy. That doesn't bother me. And if I'm on trial for my life, I want a defense attorney who's wanting to fight. But a pastor must remember that he's dealing with sheep, not cattle. They're hurting. They're often unthoughtful. And while you have the right to say, we're good, you have to be careful. You want to be gentle. You never know where people's hurting. And you're like a nursing mother taking care of her children. I'll never forget the trauma that Ruth Ann experienced. We were up in Eureka Springs at a restaurant, and Ruth Ann had in her arms little Jason, who was, what, less than a year old, maybe a year? Anyway, real small. And there was a slippery spot in the restaurant, and Ruth Ann stepped on it and fell to the ground with this baby in her arms. What do you think Ruth Ann's first response was, Miss Nilda? What would your first response be, Miss Karen?
Make sure
I had the baby up so that we could hit the ground. It slipped and she dropped the baby. And she was horrified. She didn't give a lick about any bruise, black and blue mark that was on her body. She was thinking only of one thing. Is my baby okay? I didn't have to comfort her about any physical pain. I had to comfort her the emotional pain that she had dropped her baby on the floor because of this, and she was all torn up. I've often said that that fall on the floor explains our oldest son's behavior. But it was terrible at the time. And that's the way a pastor has to be with his people. He has to be tender-hearted. He has to think of the weakest of them, the most frail. That's why the widows and the orphans were very important. You have to be gentle. People aren't interested in your logic if it's not meant mixed with tenderness. You have to be gentle. Like a nursing mother taking care of her children. So, being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel, but of our own selves, because you have become very dear to us. A pastor has to be a good lover. You can be a Bible teacher and not be a lover. You can be a Bible teacher. I've known pastors that, and I have to fight this, that are happiest in their study and being alone. And I knew of one pastor that said that he didn't care to be with the people of his church. Just didn't care to be with the people. And he would come right out of his study, right to the pulpit, and go right back. He didn't even stop to shake hands with people or greet anybody or anything. That's not a shepherd. That's a Bible teacher. Bible teacher can be that way, but not a pastor. He must love the word. Two things are required of a good pastor: love the word and love the people. Well, that's it right there. It's that simple. Love the word and love the people. And believe me, some people in the church are, not in this church naturally, but in some churches I've been in, there are some people that are hard to love. If you were a clothier, you would say that they were of the irregular size. They were like a pebble in your shoe. They just hurt. By the way, hurting people hurt people. Do you understand what I'm saying by that? When people are in pain, they very often take out their pain on you. And if you're a pastor, you see that. If people are mad at God, they're going to be mad at me. And there's nothing I can do about it. But that's the price of the pastorate. You have to have a tough hide and a tender heart. And that's a hard combination to pull off. And sometimes you have to have one blind eye and one deaf ear to the criticisms that come. But you must always love the people. And that I've had to work on that. I think the Apostle Paul had to work on that. That's why in 1 Corinthians he talks about love so much. Okay, he gave your very dear to us. Oh, I look at the clock and we're almost up. I think verse 9, which starts a new paragraph, would be a good place for us to end. The pastorate is a profound privilege. And it is a terrible responsibility. In James 3, he says, not many of you should desire to be teachers of the word, because those of you who teach get a stricter judgment. I am not looking forward to being evaluated more strictly than God evaluates Ruth Ann. Where are you? I'm not excited about that. That doesn't make me want to do cartwheels. We need to preach the truth, love the people, and you have to always consider you're dealing with sheep, not with longhorn steers. Sheep. They're not burden-bearing animals. They're easily frightened. They're easily misled. But a good shepherd loves the sheep. And the great shepherd of all not only loved the sheep, but gave himself for the sheep. Now that's a great deal of love, to be willing to die for the sheep. So I'm a long way from being the perfect pastor, but you see, some of the things I have to struggle with when I'm alone with God, I identify with Jeremiah. You're strong in public, but in private, Jeremiah just, God, why are you doing this? Why are you making me do this? It was painful to Jeremiah. Was he rewarded? We honor him to this day as a great man of God. Great man. You know, it's wonderful to be able to see people come to Christ and you build up this big church and everyone saying, oh, how the Lord is blessing. It's another thing to face hostility. By the way, remember those in Southeast Asia, for example, who are imprisoned or threatened in their life because of their faithfulness to Christ. We whine about this last election, which I think was probably stolen. We're afraid of the persecution that's going to come, and it will. But there are other people that have it now, much worse. Pray for them, that they will be faithful, and for the pastors who literally suffer for the sake of their flock. Father in heaven, you are in the mode of changing us. And there's certain of us that are very tender-hearted, but we're also tender-headed. We need to straighten up our thinking. But there's others of us, Father, as pastors, who are tough-minded and tough-hearted. Forgive us, Father. Help us to sacrifice for the flock like the chief shepherd sacrificed himself for us. Help us to be gentle. Help us to speak the truth, but in love. And help us, Father, to seek to please you in all things, even in how we treat others, for you witness everything. Help us to love the word and love your people. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.